stop persistence as our history is real. A song will can shine like gold. Welcome to the Wayne Bennett Podcast, celebrating West Virginia people, places, and the culture of Southern Appalachia. Now here's your host, Wayne Bennett.
Welcome to Wayne Bennett's podcast. My name is Wayne Bennett. This is episode 98, and it's April the 5th, 2023. And straight from Fire Tower Road, our guest today is a former coach and AD at Independence. He's also the former Coalfield Conference Commissioner, a good friend, Rick Bass. Welcome.
I'm glad to be here, Wayne. I'm glad we had an opportunity to do this.
Now you grew up in Monroe County, and was your dad a farmer? Or?
My dad was a farmer. My grandpa was a farmer, and about everybody in our whole family had some dealings with farming. Pretty much all my life, Dad later on got away from the farming aspect of it and kind of went into mechanicking. Probably when I was about maybe 10 years old, he bought a garage in Sinks Grove and a gas station. And he started running that with my mom. And, of course, my older brother, he kind of helped out a little bit too. But he got into that. Mom kind of run the grocery store and the gas station, and he would work on vehicles and lawnmowers and all kinds of things like that. So that was probably the last part of my high school years, probably was there in Sinks Grove, you know, just living in a little community there right in town.
Did you live right there? Around Sinks Grove?
Dead end Sinks Grove, right at the intersection between Route 12 and Route 3. You come up from Fort Springs and you come into Alderson from both ways, and it comes to an intersection where Route 3 and 12 meet, and the house was over to the left and the gas station was just up from the right.
Now, several years ago, Kim Reedy and I went to a race up around Union. It was Farmer's Day. I think it was the first weekend of June. I don't know whether they still have that. Still have that celebration. And it was kind of funny. It was a 5K race. And, of course, Kim was a pretty good runner. And I ran a little bit. And that was about 50, 60 people in it, but not too many real runners. And Kim won it. And it was like 8:30, 9 o'clock in the morning. Well, they wanted him to stay and be on the fire truck going on the parade, which was like 12 o'clock in the day. Of course, Kim, he wanted to do that. So we had to, but we got to, there was several vendors and it was a great time. I keep saying we'll go back there, but we have been through Union and stopped at the Amish stores and went on to that Point Bank or restaurant on down the road over right. In Virginia. And beautiful, beautiful area. And how old were you when you got into sports?
Me personally, I was probably 8-10 years old, probably. Like I said, I was doing something. We were just playing, you know, around the house. There was about a neighborhood, kind of like you grew up in too, neighborhood kids, and we'd play football, basketball, baseball, whatever the season was. And kind of short and stocky at the time, so basketball wasn't my thing. So I figured baseball or football was probably going to be something I wanted. But then between my sixth and seventh grade year, I grew about 4 inches.
Wow.
So then I started getting in more of the basketball aspect. And my dad had a carport type thing right beside the house, an old garage. It used to be an old turkey farm. And they used to raise turkeys from the little turkey, you know. And then they would take him out in the big field later on. But that was just above my house. Then Dad bought that garage later on, too. And out front, I had a basketball goal. So I was one of those day and night, sweeping the snow off the driveways, and got to be a pretty good basketball player.
Now, did they have Little League and stuff there?
They had Little League in Alderson. Okay. And that's when my dad actually was working kind of two jobs.
I remember Rosford had a little
Rosford had them, but my dad worked in Alderson. And so we would ride the bus, me and some boys from up on Flat Top Mountain, we'd ride the bus home to Flat Top, then walk down about 5 miles off of Flat Top Mountain down into Alderson, and then we'd play Little League. And then, of course, Dad would get off from work or whatever and stay around and take us back home in that night.
Now, you went to Union High School, which is not there anymore. The Union, was that a 9 through 12 school?
It was 9 through 12 at the time I was there, yes.
And you played football, basketball, and?
Football, basketball, and baseball. Never had anything else. Never had cross country, wrestling, tennis. None of that stuff was around at that time.
Well, I know Gary Ambler was a football coach up there.
Gary Ambler was my football coach. I actually had three different football coaches in about 3-4 years. We had Gary Ambler. We had a guy named Gentry. He was one of the coaches. And Billy Wayne Wickline, which was a driver's ed teacher, he was at one time. Same thing in basketball. We had pretty much three different coaches in about 4 years I was playing there. They just, you know, one would leave, come in, one would leave, one would come back in.
Was Roddy Baber going?
Roddy was still there, and probably that was my probably 10th grade year and Roddy's 9th grade year.
Okay.
And he played football, and Roddy will tell you, he said, we just beat on him was all basically he was. he was one of the practice dummies, he kept saying. But Roddy was a tough little thing. He liked, he stayed with it.
And, well, I know he went up there for a while, and then he actually graduated from Woodrow.
Yes, he came back down this way and ended up graduating back down here then.
In basketball, you guys, I remember some of those guys, Mickey Johnson, Ted Upton, Gavin Copeland, Larry Eccles. I mean, but there was a lot of single-A schools back then. I mean, people don't realize the number of schools that were around.
In about every little town, like we was talking about a minute ago, you had Alderson, Rosford, Union, Peterstown, Gatton Mills, Greenville, and that was just around in our little area. And then, of course, you had White Sulphur over that way. You had Marlington. You had Rennick, Frankfort, Creighton, all those schools. All of them had little basketball teams. And some of them had football, but not many of them did. Most of them were basketball. Talkett, for instance, all they had was basketball and baseball.
In football, the teams that you guys played, the only school now that exists is Meadow Bridge. You guys played Nuttall and Anstead.
I would say that's probably right that Meadow I can
Bridge
think of.
And they tried to close Meadow Bridge.
Oh, yeah. You're probably right. That Meadow Bridge, just now that I'm going back to think about it, we played Meadow Bridge, Anstead. Of course, that's when they won the state championships those years. We had a tough road because even in football and basketball, we either had to go through Anstead, which had a powerhouse, or we had to go through Norfolk in basketball. And they won the state championship 8 years in a row. And we had really good basketball teams my junior and senior year, losing maybe 2 or 3 games. And all of them was either to Norfolk or Oakvale and Bramwell. They were pretty good teams back in, too.
I know your senior year, you one particular game, you put up 41 points against Pocahontas County, I think. And you averaged 26 points a game. And normally, in today's time, that'd probably be first team All-State, but that got you honorable mention All-State.
Yeah, it sure did. The leading scorer in the state, which people recognize a lot more than they would me, was Warren Baker.
Yeah.
Warren was the leading scorer that year. Of course, he was at White Sulphur, and then he went to Greenbrier East. They closed that school, I would say, probably in 71 or 72, they closed White Sulphur, and he ended up going to Greenbrier East. Of course, that's where he graduated from. But, you know, he was also a first baseman. A lot of people
didn't
know
that's what I was getting ready to say. People don't realize he was a pretty good baseball player.
Oh, yeah, he hit the ball good. I mean, at 6'8", 6'9". Of course, you couldn't overthrow him at first base. I mean, no shortstop put it anywhere close to him. He caught it, and I pitched to him. Like I said, he was a tough out even to try to get him out because he had a big range there of his strike zone, but still he could cover it pretty good and pretty quick.
Well, I know he was at the state tournament. He was the one everybody was talking about. They wanted to see. And but I can remember a game when Baker and East came to Beckley, and Cedric Robinson had one of the best games he'd ever had against Baker. I mean, and it, I mean, he scored 20-some points and looked great right there in the middle, you know. But you can't do that every day, I don't think. But there was also on the stake, too, there was Danny Moses, was, I think, down in Williamson.
Yeah.
He was a pretty good ball player, too, Division One. And so what kind of – well, you talk about baseball – you pitched no-hitter baseball, too, didn't you?
I pitched a couple no-hitters. I pitched two in high school and one in college.
Did you?
I pitched one against Salem when we were playing. No, it wasn't Salem. It was Concord. I pitched a no-hitter against Concord at our old field up at – of course, they got a beautiful complex at Glenville now with Mr. Ike coming in and putting a lot of money into the baseball and the softball fields and everything, and, of course, basketball, too. But Ike Morse was the – he is and still is the money person in Glenville. And we played down on the old football field. And the football field and baseball field was basically the same thing. But Concord, had, of course, you had the NAIA then. That's when everything was, you know, pretty well compartmentized with Concord, Glenville, Fairmont, Morris Harvey, those schools and like that. And everybody had pretty much basketball and baseball.
What kind of music did y'all listen to over in the country when you was growing up?
I remember listening to some country, but very little, because country music wasn't something that you'd think being in the country. I remember The Who. I remember ZZ Top, I think, was coming along pretty good maybe that time. I'm not sure.
What do you listen to now?
Oh, I like country. I pretty well, that's all I have my radio set on, pretty much country now.
I like classic country.
I do too.
I don't like the new country too much, but every once in a while I'll see something. Now, after high school, you went to Glenville State. How come Glenville State?
Well, more than anything else, everybody in Union and Peterstown was going to Concord. And I'd been with those people for four, you know, years, or even some of them through junior high and high school both. So I decided I was going to go somewhere different. Coach Jess Lilly came down and talked to me and gave me a scholarship, and also had one from Concord. And I can't think of Coach Don Christie. And then that was when Beckley College still had the program, and Coach Cook was still the coach at that time too. So that was my three offers, and again, a lot of the people that was in that area were going to Concord. So I decided I'm wanting to get away from home, get away from everybody for a little while. So I went to Glenville.
And you played basketball and baseball?
I played basketball for 1 year until I hurt my knee. I played 1 year football, believe it or not. I was up there my first year, and I had got up early to check in and get everything lined up and stuff like that and get in my room. I had an apartment up there. And Bill Hanlon was a coach at the time. He was a football coach, and was going through the lunchroom, and he looked over. I mean, I was a pretty good-sized boy at the time, too. I was, you know, 6'3", probably about 240 or something like that, coming out of high school. And he asked me, he said, "Are you one of my football recruits?" Because most of them were already there. And I said, "No, sir." He said, "Boy, I tell you what, we need some bodies." He said, "You know, just warm bodies to get out on that field." And I said, "Well," he said, "what did you play?" I said, "Well, I played offensive end and defensive end, and I kicked a little bit, kicked off." He said, "Well, we could really use somebody." So I actually played for 1 year of football, and I played tight end, and I got hurt again on that. I hurt my knee again, so I was pretty well done. We were playing down at West Virginia Tech up on the mountain up there, and the first string tight end got hurt the first couple of plays of the game. Second string tight end got hurt and will make the next two or three plays. So I had to go in and play tight end, which I didn't know much about at all. Caught a pass on the sideline, turned, knee blew out again. So that was the second time. So I was pretty well done with football at that time.
They lost three tight ends.
Tight ends in one game.
Now, what'd you get a degree in from Glenville?
What they called them was a comprehensive field with driver's ed, health, safety, first aid, etc. And then, like I said, I started off, of course, teaching physical education at Daniels Elementary. That was my first year. Then I left there and came to the Y with you and everybody and stayed there till 84 is when I left there, I think.
So you left a couple years after I left.
Yes, just a little bit after you had. Chuck had already gone too. Chuck Littlejohn already left.
What people didn't realize, you know, when we were at the old Y, and of course we relied on programs primarily, you know, because we didn't have the nicest facility in the world. And then we got the new facility down there, which gave us a lot more things to sell. But what people didn't realize is we were open 7 days a week then at night till 10 o'clock at night. And it for the employees, plus we had a little bit of a mortgage over our head. So we had to make things work. And it was a lot of hours.
There was a lot of hours went in. I mean, work weekends. I know me and you both put a lot of time in. You did with wrestling. I did with basketball. Then we picked up a men's basketball league program running on Sunday nights, playing it Monday sometimes too. And, you know, you got out of there 10, 11 o'clock at night sometimes if you're lucky.
Well, at the old Y, the 1 year, I kind of got soccer going a little bit. We met at Warren Williams, and Kyle Rote Jr. was a professional soccer player, and soccer seemed to be the big thing. And Coca-Cola had a program where they gave you soccer balls and rule books and a few things like that. So the first year I built some goals. They weren't normal size, but I built some goals, and we played down at Warren Williams on the Dust Bowl, and the field was only about 60 yards or whatever. And I think I had about four teams or whoever showed up, you know. And then we took an all-star team. Colonel Don Atkins, as boys played, and we took an all-star team down to Bluefield. And Bluefield had a pretty good soccer program at that time because the Bluefield State students that came in from the other countries, they were getting it going. And but it was at that time I knew I couldn't run it. I didn't know anything about soccer, but I knew I had too many other things. I had races and wrestling and weightlifting and all this stuff. Yeah. And so I think Bob took it bowling and then went to Sophia. They got a field to play over there. And then you come in there somewhere.
I came in about the same time because I had a couple guys, Yornot, which had passed away years ago, and Eric Lawson. They were two of my had kids in the program that were, you know, 6-7 years old. And we didn't go to Sophia for quite a while. We started off down in New River Park and PAX.
That's right.
That was the two places I started. Right. And Bob had basically just said, here, this is yours. You take it and run with it. And PAX had a couple teams. Mount Hope then started having a couple teams. So we had our own little league. We'd played PAX one time. We'd play at Mount Hope. Then we'd come down and play at New River Park. Then we got things moving up a little bit more. We went down to Sophia and played down at the old football field behind Sophia High School. And, of course, it did. Like you said, it grew. I mean, we had 50 kids maybe the first year or so, and then went to 500 kids within 2 or 3 years, and then it just kept going and going and going. So when I left, probably we had just started the fields on Dry Hill Road. I'd had, I can't remember his name now, but he helped a lot. His boys were playing.
Chris Klein, maybe?
No, it wasn't Chris Klein. It was, he had a lot of equipment. Thompson, Gary Thompson.
Okay.
Gary Thompson had a business up in that area somewhere, so he had the bulldozers and stuff.
Yeah.
And he came down and leveled everything and got everything going. And so we had three pretty good fields there for quite a while. And then, I left in 84, got back into teaching again down at Trapp Hill. So, and like I said, but soccer had really started off by that time. There was 1,200, 1,400 kids just in the Beckley area that was playing then.
Yeah, it was busy. My youngest son was playing in the league at that time. I can remember, and of course now you know what it's going through now. Well, during that time while you were at the Y and stuff, you were when you had time, you're playing softball. And I remember one of the good teams, the Skyland Construction. That was a pretty good ball club.
Yep. And then I had played for Tabor's Market, played for Dale Tabor. Wilkes had a real good team at the time. Me and Butch Smith and Johnny Scott and some of us was on that team. And then we actually started the Skyland thing was Dr. Anderson.
Yeah.
He lived out at Flat Top and he wanted to get a team together. So that was our first kind of big travel team. And again, that was pretty much the same one. Tommy Gilkerson was over from over at Oak Hill area and me and Butch Smith, Johnny Scott, a couple other guys, like I said, they're pretty good hitters. And we ended up traveling around for a couple years with that. Then we got in with Dale Tabor and started doing the same thing, but on a little bit bigger level with Dale.
Yeah, people don't realize how big softball was back then.
Very big.
I mean, we had, I ran the leagues there a couple years. The last year we were in Beckley and then down at Fitzpatrick. And when I ran the league at Fitzpatrick, we played every night. We cut off at like 36 teams in the open, 16 church teams, women's teams, industrial team on Sundays, plus a tournament every weekend. And it was, I mean, if you want to play ball, you could play anywhere.
Oh, yeah.
And some of the guys played two or three leagues, you know, and I don't know when you quit. I think I quit before you did. I'm sure I did. But it got to a point, I was playing with Superior Furniture, which is a pretty good ball club. A bunch of guys loved the game. But we had played in Oak Hill League. We played in the Beckley League. We played every weekend. And I think that one year I played almost 170 ball games. And I just, it was a little, I don't know how I stayed married. Of course, Bobby Sanger and a couple of them said they didn't.
Yeah, well, I didn't either. I didn't make it through the first one either after all those softballs. Like you said, you was somewhere every weekend. You was at Parkersburg. You was at Charleston. You was, you know, somewhere different about every weekend. It was kind of tough on the marriage life. it was not just a few of us that lost it, but yeah, I lost that. I lost the first wife too because of it.
When I quit, I was playing with Randy Snuffer and Universal and them on Sunday nights. They just played on Sunday nights, didn't play no tournaments or anything like that. It was Industrial League, and they could pick up two players that didn't work at the place. And we played one year, had a great time, and I was looking forward to the next year. And he said, oh, we're not going to play. We sat fish and stuff. And so that ended my career then, I guess. I don't know when you quit, but
I played quite a few more years probably after that because, like I said, I was the same thing. I hurt my knee again. That was the third time. Had to have scope on it again somewhere. It was after I left the Y, and I probably played – with Roddy and those guys when they had the team out of Mabscott. I can't remember his name now. He had the Miller Distributing, Bill something. Anyway.
Jim something.
Jim, yeah. That's what it was. And anyway, I played with them for a few more years, and then I kind of hung it up too. Just couldn't do it with my knee.
You mentioned working at Trap Hill. I remember when you were working at Trap Hill, and there was an article came in that in the paper about the Hawk and Dove nightclub. They were closing it down and taking their license, and they kept saying the owner, Rick Vass, and it was in all over the paper. And then the next day, a print came back out, and the guy's name was Roy Vass.
Roy Vass, yeah. I kept
so getting, this is I not got a lot the Rick Vass from down at Trap.
Yeah, I got a lot of that from that time period. It was Roy that actually had it. It was up on Harper Road. It had the Hawk and Dove, and I can't remember his wife's name right off the top of my head. It seemed like her name might have been Kay. Roy and Kay. But that was them, yes. But it did come out, and I had a lot of calls from that one, too.
But now, you ended up at Independence High School, and you, over the years, you coached cross-country, track, golf. Anything else you coached?
No, that was about all I'd done was on that. I helped some with the basketball a little bit when Chad was there, just, you know, on the floor and just helping him a little bit. Never was an assistant coach or anything like that. I was more heading toward the athletic director, you know, trying to keep things going in the right direction. And when Tom Poe retired, I took over the AD. So, like I said, I had my hands in a little bit of everything in as far as all the sports and stuff like that. So, basically, all I had that time was golf.
Yeah.
And so, it didn't interfere too much with anything I was doing with other
Had you ever played golf as a kid or younger? No. When did you take up golf?
I didn't start playing golf until, actually, the first time I ever played was in college. Had to have an individual and dual sport, and Coach Jess Lilly was, he was the teacher for that, and the first day he got us together, there was four of us needed that individual and dual sports to graduate. Somehow we needed one credit, and there was about four of us. So he said, fellas, he said, I'll make this pretty easy. He said, you meet me at 8 o'clock out at the golf course out of Glenville. And he said, we're going to play golf. So that was what we did for about 4 weeks or so. And that I didn't have a set of clubs, nothing. They had an old set there that they had at the clubhouse. And I think it was four of us. And none of us ever played golf before either. So that's the first time I ever picked it, and never played anymore for quite a while. That was just my introduction to playing golf. But I did play later on. And
you've played in a lot of invitationals around and played in some of the state sponsored tournaments and done quite well. I mean, I know some of the bigger tournaments, competitive tournaments like the BNI and those tournaments. And of course, we got to mention the Gibo. You played in that, won that thing age group several times. But it used to be that what tournaments they had was everything was more competitive golf. We had Raleigh Custom Golf, and we had different sponsors like T&J and Beckley Newspapers. But then now it seems like more, you still have a couple competitive tournaments, but now it's more like team fundraising tournaments, you know.
A lot of it is now. I reckon the biggest one now is not, it's the one that was the BNI at one time.
Ryan Neal and those
guys.
Yeah,
they took it over, and it's still competitive. There's still some good players, but, you know, those guys like myself that are in their 60s and stuff can't compete with those kids that's just now coming out of high school. I mean, they have no backs, and, you know, they can swing. And, I mean, you know, you got high school kids shooting in the low 70s, even the high 60s. Coming straight out of high school, and they play in those tournaments, and, you know, just over the years, I know that the Reese boy won, and then you had the boy from Shady that's won. So it's more of a very competitive with those age groups more than anything else, with the 18 to 24, and some of those older guys still just go out and have fun, getting their group of four and have a good day with it, you know.
Well, golf has been kind of a hot and cold type sport anyway. I remember it hadn't been that long ago that they thought building golf courses one of the biggest businesses you could get into, and now they're closing left and right, you know, everywhere. I mean, go to Myrtle Beach and some of the places used to be golf courses are now housing developments, and it just kind of like tennis, it kind of goes up and down locally. And of course, this week is the week of the Masters. Have you ever been to the Masters?
Never been there. No, never.
My brother had been to the U.S. Open several times, and he never got to go to the Masters. It was, you had to be win a lottery.
Yeah, you basically had to either know somebody or win the lottery. I mean, you know, you had to know somebody way up the ladder somewhere. My brother-in-law, James' brother, he has been a couple times, but he had worked in Atlanta, and some of the higher Anarchy had some tickets, and he's got to go about two or three times. But
it seems like people that don't even play a lot of golf seem to get interested the week of the Masters.
Yeah.
It's such a beautiful course, and the way they handle it on TV. And while you're doing all this stuff, you done carpenter work, remodeling? Where'd you learn to do that?
Just over the years, when I got out of high school or got out of college, I started living down on City Avenue with, he's not around anymore, Bob Daniels Carpet, Bob. And he had an old apartment building, and there was an old guy named Sleepy Snuffer was his main carpenter. And there was two or three of us guys that Bob had worked for different things and put us in doing little jobs and this and that and the other. So I started learning from him more than anything else. He remodeled that whole upstairs of that old carpet place. We put in apartments and cleaned and cut, and I learned a lot from him. And then every summer I'd pick up little things, you know, by just doing jobs on my own and working with other people that were avid carpenters that were actually good. So I learned a lot of that from them and started picking it up. My main thing, I like doing decks. I like being outside in the summertime doing that. And it's something you can get done in a week or so, and you're out of there, and you don't have to worry about being there for a month or two. So
yeah,
I like doing the decks outside.
Well, tell me a little bit about your family now. Wife and grandkids?
Yeah, well, like I said, my mom and dad passed away. Both of them were gone. So we sold the property over in Monroe County back probably 7 years ago, mom, when she passed away. But my brother still lives in Rossford. My sister lives in Rennick. I'm the baby. My brother's 76. My sister's 74. And so I was the baby of the whole thing. So anyway, they still live over that way. And I go over to see them all the time and take care of my brother some. He's having some heart problems right now. So I'm actually heading to Charleston tomorrow to take him down to do some tests and stuff. But got two wonderful grandbabies now. One's 8 and one's 4. And they keep you moving because they're just now getting into sports themselves. The little one's just now starting to play t-ball, which is a trip. The other one just now started with the pitch, you know, which actually the player's pitch, and he played his first game the other night at the Little League. And he's going to be a pretty good little baseball player. His dad was a good baseball player, Matt Densher. Matt and then went to state tournament at when it was actually it was still the old Watt Powell Park at the time when they were still there. But my wife, she retired 2 years before I did because she was going to take care of the boys, you know, and that's what she's done. She's super grandma right now, and she's with them right now. She goes over every morning. Matt and Megan take off work. She gets the boys, takes them to school. The little one's in school down at Crab Orchard down at the church. And then the older one, Braden, he goes to Shady Elementary. And I pick him up. That's my job at 2 o'clock. I'm out there and I pick him up and take him to either our house or their house, depending on which way he's going. He's either got jiu-jitsu or baseball, or he was playing basketball back when it was colder too. So, but I enjoy them.
For sure. Now, in 2011, you were the golf coach of the year in a state. Secondary schools had honored you there, and you're still playing golf. I know whenever you get a chance. But you also, probably in the 90s, you took over as Coalfield Conference Commissioner.
That was in 93, actually, when I took over. It was kind of at that point, it was going downhill. The Coalfield, nobody wanted to do it. Nobody wanted to take the reins on it. And at that time, it was traveling from school to school. In other words, Wayne Bennett at Woodrow would have it this year, then it would come to Rick Vass at Independence, then it would go to somebody at Liberty alphabetically. And things got kind of out of function the way I kind of figured it, you know, because nobody knew what was going on from half the time. Because like I said, when you keep something for just a year, you really can't keep a handle on what's going on. So I seen it was going to do that, and I got the coaches pretty much all together, got a little committee with football, basketball, and baseball, and the whole thing. And we decided to come up with a commissioner, which was going to be me, and Ed Gilson was going to help me. Of course, we were both at Independence at the time. And so actually, I took it over in 93, then I started my first banquet in 94 down at Cattleman Steakhouse, down where the old Hunting Rock was. That was me and Fred Persinger. So that was our first year, and what we did every year after that, we had athletes from each school. At that time, I think we had 25, maybe 30 schools, and so we had quite a few. And we would just take a male and a female athlete from each school, and they were all voted on by the coaches at their school, and there'd be a male athlete and a female athlete, and we'd bring them in, feed them dinner, and we'd raise money during the year. I raised money from just different things, and I had some donations. Governor Justice at the time was just running to Greenbrier and things like that. So he helped me a whole lot. He gave some money to the organization. And like I said, we kind of went from that and just kept getting a little bit bigger and bigger and bigger. And we, of course, the Cattlemen closed, and we went a couple other places, went to the Armory for quite a few years, and then we went to Tamarack for the last few years I was there. And I think it's doing good now. I think the guys that are actually in charge of it now, They've got a good handle on what's going on now too with it, the guys from
Denver. Well, you tried to quit in 2009 and then they wouldn't let you, I guess.
Yeah. Well, nobody would take it. That's the thing. You know, it's one of those things you go, I'd like to get out of this. If I, somebody take over, well, nobody wanted to take over. Nobody wanted the responsibility of it. So I went about, I probably went about another two or three more years before I actually, and actually I was still actually doing the Coalfield Conference when I retired. I kept it for two more years after that.
Oh,
so,
really?
So I, yeah. So I probably got out of it in about probably 2014, somewhere in that area.
Well, the AAA schools had dropped out because there was not that many around, and then they now they're back. I know you got East and Princeton and Oak Hill and Beckley. Is there any other AAA schools? Yeah,
that's the only ones that, like I said, we had. That was pretty much the base back then too. Yeah. Until they decided, like, some of them went to Mountain State. Well, most of them did. I think the only one probably didn't was Oak Hill. They kind of had dropped at that
Oak
time.
Oak Hill had dropped a class.
Double A. So, but Greenbrier East, Princeton, Woodrow, they all went to the Mountain State, and of course that didn't last very long. I mean, lasted a few years, but. And then the big thing, I think, what got most of those back into the conference is the wrestling, because they basically had no conference, you know, with what they were doing, and they had to travel here miles to go to a wrestling thing. So I think you'd even mentioned one time, me and you were talking, that they would, the coach at Greenbrier East wanted to get back into the Coalfield. So the guys then put wrestling back in as the first part of the Coalfield Conference as a AAA type thing. And then now, with the guys that are doing it now, they've got pretty much everything now is you got AAA division, AA, and single A.
That's a good tournament, wrestling-wise.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
That's a tough tournament. And you had Independence, who's second to state this year, and Woodrow was fourth in AAA, and several of those teams were top 10, Greenbrier West,
always
state
there.
Championship. And I mean, that's... But the guys that are running now, Greg Fournette and those guys, they're talking about, they're trying to do something to where they have a Coalfield basketball tournament. It's going to be difficult, you know, but because really the conference before didn't require you to play another conference school, so to speak. And I don't know whether it'll ever happen in football. Nobody wants to play Bluefield too much.
Nobody ever did. That
year
was
in
problem.
And year out. So I don't know, but they are trying to change some things. And just yesterday, the State Board of Control passed four classifications for certain sports, and it's got to be approved by the Board of Education. I don't know how that's going to affect conferences. I don't know, of course, they've done that in basketball, and it seems to be okay. You know, I personally, I'm not really for that. Football, even this past few years, a team with a losing record could get in the playoffs. Now, I don't know what's going to happen.
Well, I've seen the basketball firsthand. I went to the state basketball tournament for my only years I missed the state basketball tournament was during the COVID. So I've been going basically 50 years to the state basketball tournament since I was 18 and haven't missed a year except for those COVID years. But this particular year, on the first couple of days, was the games were not very good.
I listened to
you. You had 30, 40 point blowouts because you got this, you got a team like Wheeling Park playing somebody, you know, that's, probably half their population, you know, considering with the AAA, AA thing, they're sitting there at 1,800 kids and kids coming out of Maryland or whatever, and Martinsburg, those areas, and then you're playing somebody, a small 4A school, and there was a lot of discrepancy there as far as games. The first 2 days, now the last part of the tournament was good because you then narrowed that down to the better teams, you know, in the AA, AAA, and of course the last, like I said, the Saturday was great, the Friday games were good, but those first couple of days was not much watching.
There's a lot of blow, a couple surprise. Jefferson upset GW, but there was mostly blowouts. Listened to, and it was the same way in girls basketball too, but
yeah.
So I don't know exactly how that's gonna, they mentioned mainly in addition to basketball, it would be football, volleyball, cheerleading, baseball, and softball. And didn't say it would have any effect on wrestling or tennis or some of those. So we'll see how it goes. And a state that's consistently losing population and schools are getting smaller and consolidating, I just don't see adding another class. But
well, I'm like you on that. It was, you know, if you get a state like Georgia and Florida and that can handle that and has got the population to do sure. it, you know, you got 5 and 6A schools in some of those states, but they've got the population to do it with.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
like you said, West Virginia, declining seemed like every year we're losing people from the school system. I just noticed the other day, again, like you said in the paper, that Raleigh County was cutting 26 employees, you know, due to just the number of kids in the school system now that's just not there.
You're retired, and other than hauling grandkids around, what's on your bucket list? I always ask this question. What's something that you, within the realms of possibility, what's on your bucket, something you'd like to do you haven't done?
One of the things that I've always said this, that, you know, if I'd ever had the opportunity, because I like playing golf real well, I'd love to go to Scotland. That would be probably the top of my list to go play, you know, in the sheep fields, you know, type thing, St. Andrews and da-da-da. That would be, and I know I've heard people talk about it being very tough to play. Don't get in the traps and don't get in the big hay field. But that was what I've always wanted to do. It probably is not going to happen, but it's still one of those things you can look at.
Do they let the general public play it?
Oh, yeah. You got to pay a little bit. But, again, my brother-in-law, he's taken his grandkids over there from year after year. He had a pile of grandkids, so that's their graduation gifts. He takes them wherever they want to go. And he's went to England, he's went to France, he's went to Rome, da da da. But one of the boys wanted to go to St. Andrews. So I think he didn't pay much more than maybe a couple $100s, maybe, which, yeah. you know, wasn't too bad considering where you're playing. But,
well, Rick, I appreciate you coming by, man. And I always consider your friend and glad you're doing great. And keep enjoying life, man.
I'm hoping to. Keeping as long as I can.
Anybody else out there would like to be on the program, you can contact me at awbennett50@gmail.com. Until next time, remember, if you're not dead yet, you're not done yet. This is Wayne Bennett, and God bless you.
Little town and the whole world too. And last Sunday when my Bengals lost, Lord, it put me in a bad mood. I have moments when I curse the rain and then complain when the sun's too hot. I look around at what everyone has and I forget about all I've got. But I know I'm a lucky man. God's given me a pretty fair hand. Got a house and a piece of land. A few dollars and a coffee can. My old truck's still running good. My ticker's ticking like they say it should. I got supper in the oven. A good woman's loving. One more day to pay my little kids back. Lord knows I'm a lucky man. Who would be here fast? I could call him any time of day. Got a brother who's got my back. Got a mama who I swear is right. Got a brand new rod and reel. Got a full week of fish here.